Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
I'm Andrew McDermott. Today I'm speaking with paleoentomologist Dr. Günter Bechli, a senior fellow with Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Bechli served as curator for amber and fossil insects in the Department of Paleontology at the State Museum of Natural History in Stuttgart, Germany. He earned his PhD in geosciences from Eberhard Karls University in Tübingen. Bechli specializes in the fossil history and systematics of insects, the most diverse group of animals, and especially dragonflies. Günter, thanks for joining us again.
Hi, Andrew. Nice to talk again.
Well, today I'd like to explore with you the evidence and implications of a new human fossil find in the Philippines. I know you've been reading up on it and writing on it. First, could you briefly outline what discovery led to the recent description of a new fossil in the Philippines and why it was discovered in the first place?
Right. So it was just 2 weeks ago that a new study was published in the prestigious journal Nature by Detroit et al. And was titled A New Species of Homo from the Late Pleistocene of the Philippines. And of course, the media again celebrated this discovery as a potential rewriting of human history. And like most discoveries, this one, of course, also has a longer backstory. And this backstory starts with excavations that were conducted at Calao Cave on the northern part of the island of Luzon. And the first excavations were done already in 2007 and then other ones in 2011 and 2015. And they were led by a Philippine scientist, Dr. Armand Mijares from the University of the Philippines. And he was successful where other people failed because he was literally digging deeper than the usual 4 or 5 feet. And other archaeologists and paleoanthropologists did not bother to dig deeper than that because they simply did not expect to find anything older than, say, 10,000 years. So Mijares and his colleagues unearthed several hominin remains, such as 7 isolated teeth, 2 finger bones, 3 feet bones, and a fragment of a thigh bone. And they were unearthed from limestone layers that could be dated radiometrically to a late Pleistocene age of at least 50,000 years up to 67,000 years. A single foot bone was already found in the first excavation in 2007 and was tentatively described by Mijares in 2010 in the Journal of Human Evolution, but it was not yet named as a new species. And last year, in 2018, Injiko described in Nature the discovery of 57 stone tools from Luzon Island from a 709,000-year-old site called Kalinga, in also northern Luzon. And this site is twice as old as the supposed origin of Homo sapiens in Africa, and therefore it shows that more archaic, more primitive hominins must have been living on Luzon Island then. And such an archaic hominin affinity is also suggested by the now published anatomical study of these Homo luzonensis fossils, as the new species was called by Dr. Florent Detroit from the Natural History Museum in Paris and his colleagues. And in their study, they revealed similarities with the more ape-like genus Australopithecus rather than similarities with human genus Homo. And some of these more primitive characters that correspond to Australopithecus are, for example, that the premolar teeth have 3 roots, or that the shape of the toe bone is curved, and such curved toes are otherwise only found in very early Australopithecines because they are an adaptation for climbing in trees rather than for efficient bipedal walking. So that's basically the story of the discoveries and what they described.
Okay, so this is years in the making and literally happened because someone challenged their own perception of what they might find and dug a little deeper, is that right?
Exactly.
Okay. Well, how justified is this naming of a new species? I've read that some scientists criticize the evidence as weak.
That's right. So the new species was indeed criticized because the evidence is only based on a few isolated bones. And so some other paleoanthropologists like Bernard Wood said in an interview, that's a quote from Bernard Wood, it's really at the lower end of the amount of evidence that you would want to base a new species on. However, in my view, I think that the very strange and very unique combination of primitive and derived characters clearly justifies a new species indeed. And also eminent paleoanthropologist John Hawkes, who has a famous weblog on fossil hominins, and he was part of the team of scientists that described Homo naledi a few years ago, he also agrees and he emphasized, and that's again a quote, no other known species shares the whole set of features found at Callao. And in another article said, together they represent a mesh of features that are confusingly reminiscent of a huge range of other hominins and together make for something new and hard to classify. So overall, I think the evidence clearly shows that Homo luzonensis is a justified new species.
Is there a well-established tree of fossil humans? And how does this fit into that organization?
Oh, that's a good question. Indeed, there is no well-established tree of fossil humans, contrary to the impression you might get if you look at many textbooks. And that's mostly because there is a very chaotic rather than an orderly distribution of these primitive and modern characters in various fossil humans. So the character pattern does not align well with a nested hierarchy, and the nested hierarchy would then translate into a dichotomic tree. And even the most recent tree on fossil humans that was presented by John Hawkes this year to more than 5,000 people who are working on human evolution and fossil humans, he put a question mark at almost every node of the human tree. So that's one point. And nevertheless, the same John Hawkes now commented in one of his blog posts on the new finding that this new hominin shakes the family tree. Again, the non-existent family tree. So the $1 million question is, what are the potential affinities of Homo luzonensis? And the authors of the original description in this recent Nature paper, they just briefly mentioned that the fossil exhibits certain features that are rare in the human genus Homo and rather found in the more ape-like genus Australopithecus. But they ultimately conclude that the phylogenetic relationships remain to be determined. So basically, they do not really dare to touch this hot topic in their article. And in one of the blog posts on the finding, again, John Hawkes, he speculated about possible affinities of this new species and other hominin species from Southeast Asian islands with these enigmatic Denisovan men that was discovered in Northeast Asia. But as I've recently mentioned in an article at Evolution News, there are, in my view, two arguments against such an Denisovan affinity. And one is that from Denisovans, we could extract DNA, unlike from these tropical finds from the Southeast Asian islands. Denisovans were found in a cold region where DNA is better preserved. And there could have been done, there were done phylogenomic studies, and they showed that Denisovans are relatively modern members of the genus Homo, sister group to the Neanderthalians. And on the other hand, the anatomical data suggest that these island hominins, like the Luzon man, belong to a much more primitive Homo habilis-like grade of humans. So that's one argument that this new fossil species is not related to Denisovans. The other argument is a bit weaker, and it is based on the estimated small body size of the Luzon man and also of the possibly related hobbit man from the Indonesian island of Flores. And both have a very small size based on the estimations of these fossil remains. They would have had a height of less than 4 feet. And that would suggest this commonality between the Luzon man and the hobbit from Flores, that they both derive from an already dwarf-sized ancestor. But on the other hand, we have a few fossil remains from Denisovans. And recently this year, there was also the first skull fragment discovered. And they suggest that Denisovans had a large body size, like Homo erectus and Neanderthals. And this argument would basically point against an affinity with Denisovans again, and also against an affinity with Homo erectus or Neanderthalian. So most commenters on the new discovery emphasize the small size of Homo luzonensis. And they sometimes also say, well, but the incomplete state of the fossils, only just a few fragments, they do not yet allow to be sure about the body size. But anyway, of course, this new discovery reminds of this other dwarf-sized East Asian island hominin, the famous hobbit man from Flores, which was discovered in 2003. And it's not only because Homo luzonensis shares this short stature, but also this mixture of primitive and derived traits. There has been a relatively recent phylogenetic analysis of the hobbit man by Argue et al. In 2017. And they revealed that the hobbit is not, as was previously believed, a descendant of Homo erectus that then underwent a kind of island dwarfism, but that it is more closely related to the very primitive African Homo habilis, which many paleoanthropologists consider not as a Homo, but rather as an Australopithecine. And the same may hold for Homo luzonensis. And if it is not even more primitive, for example, like Australopithecus afarensis, like very early Australopithecines, because this would be suggested by these ape-like curved toe bones that indicate a climber rather than a walker. So the jury is still out, but my bet would be on something like an early Australopithecine, like Australopithecus afarensis, at best something like Homo habilin, great, but certainly not a modern human or Homo erectus-like animal.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate your careful reasoning there. Now, I know there was a bit of surprise that these fossils were found in the Philippine Islands. There were no land bridges connecting them to mainland Southeast Asia. So how did these extinct humans reach that area?
Right. That is indeed a problem. And meanwhile, we know several cases of archaic hominins. So hominins that were considered by most researchers as, let's say it in a simple way, too stupid to build boats. There were several of these forms found on islands that could not be reached by land bridges and for which the reconstructed ocean currents also would have precluded swimming as means of dispersal. And also swimming over longer distances would have been impossible for large ape-like creatures. If you look which kind of rivers can a chimp cross then crossing the street from mainland to Luzon or to Sulawesi or to Flores would have been impossible for an archaic hominin. And examples for such island hominins of the more archaic grade would be not only the new Luzon man and the hobbit man from Flores, but also an unknown yet unnamed hominin from the Indonesian island of Sulawesi. There was a paper in 2016 in Nature that documented stone tools from a site on Sulawesi that are 118,000 years old, so too old to be of Homo sapiens origin. And also in the Mediterranean Sea, there have been finds on the island of Crete that have been dated to 130,000 to 700,000 years, also stone tools. And in all these cases, the question is, how did these archaic hominins reach those islands? So scientists came up with two possibilities. Some scientists suggested a merely accidental dispersal with driftwood and floating vegetation mats during large storm events or tsunami events. And other scientists suggested that these extinct humans were smarter than we thought and that they could deliberately build ocean-going rafts. So John Hawkes, again, thinks that this kind of sailor hypothesis would better explain these multiple independent colonizations of such islands. But there is a problem with this Saylor hypothesis, and the problem is if we look at the actual archaeological evidence for boat building, then the oldest boat that we know, and even this is controversial still among scientists in its interpretation, is a wooden canoe from the Mesolithic village of Pesse in the Netherlands, and it's dated to 10,000, the recent dating even only 8,000 years old. So there would be a huge gap between this actual evidence for boat building and the assumed boat building or raft building for those archaic hominins. And we have no evidence at all that these archaic hominins could do anything beyond producing stone tools and controlling fire. So how these people, if we may call them people at all, reach those islands is a kind of mystery.
Well, what are the implications of this discovery for the Darwinian story of human origins and as well for intelligent design theory?
Yeah, there are some. So it's a very interesting discovery with various implications, not only for Darwinism, but also for intelligent design theory. So the first would be that this discovery at least shows that the fossil history of humans was much more diverse and much more complex than previously believed. So the simple narrative that we had in the textbooks is not correct. So there was an interview in National Geographic of a Japanese paleoanthropologist, Yuzuke Kaifu, from the National Museum in Tokyo, and he said that this new hominin, quote, further highlights remarkable diversity of archaic primitive hominins once present in Asia in a way beyond my expectation. So now Darwin critics have got used to read between the lines because evolutionist scientists have become eager to avoid admitting problems of the theory. So if we look at this last part of the quote, beyond my expectation, this is simply a doublespeak for contrary to Darwinian predictions and thus representing conflicting evidence. So that is one point. Another point would be that Homo luzonensis is an out-of-place fossil, and such fossils should not even exist according to evolutionists like Richard Dawkins. And this means it was found at the wrong place, and it was also found for the wrong time period. So such a primitive hominin should not have been living outside of Africa at all, and especially not on the Philippines, and certainly not just 50,000 years ago as a contemporary already of modern humans. After, let's say, 1.5 to 2 million years after the supposed extinction of Australopithecines or Homo habilis-like forms to which these fossil humans probably were most closely related. So that's the next problem. So we have a kind of temporal paradox and a geographic paradox. And as I already mentioned, the new discovery has not only shaken the human phylogenetic tree, but it confirms that the fossil evidence does not support an unambiguous phylogenetic tree of fossil humans at all. And this is a problem because Darwinian theory predicts that there should be one true tree of life, and to this one true tree of life, all the evidence should ultimately converge, and the fossil record respectfully disagrees again and again. And a final point, because of this already mentioned weird mixture of primitive and derived characters, these new fossils from the Philippines add to this mess that is already existing in the fossil record of humans that does not form a smooth transitional series, for example, as you see it in textbook for the horses, where you have the series from Eocene horses, which were small and had smaller teeth and had not a single toe, but several toes. And then you get this transitional series in a smooth way, gradual from the ancestors to the modern horses. And something like this is not possible to do with the fossil humans from ape-like forms to modern humans. And not only in terms of a morphological series, but also not in terms of a temporal series from older primitive to younger derived forms. So the fossils simply, you cannot align them in this way. And this is also conflicting evidence because Darwinism would predict the opposite. So I see several core predictions from the neo-Darwinian theory of evolution refuted, and with a new finding again refuted by empirical data. And of course, such conflicting evidence has meanwhile greatly accumulated, and it should be recognized that Darwin is a theory in crisis, to quote a book title by our friend Michael Denton. And on the other hand, if you look at the evidence, it's much better compatible with the theory of intelligent design, where, for example, this non-hierarchical distribution of similarities can be easily accommodated with modular design principles, as recently been suggested by Winston Ehret with his dependency graph hypothesis. So the evidence conflicts with the predictions of Darwinism, and they align well with the predictions from intelligent design theory.
Well, Günther, it's so important to move past the headlines and examine the evidence carefully, something you've really helped us do today. I appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
Well, to learn more about Dr. Günther Bechli's work, visit his website, www.bechli.at, B-E-C-H-L-Y.at. To hear more interviews with Dr. Bechli and others in the intelligent design research community, hop on over to idthefuture.com or search for the show wherever podcasts are found. For ID the Future, I am Andrew McDermott. Thanks for listening.
From jumping insects with real gears to the strange world of carnivorous plants, the details of the natural world reveal planning and purpose. In his new book, Foresight, Brazilian scientist Marcos Eberlin shows how the mantis shrimp can pack a deadly punch and how a tiny protein in a bird's eye may work just like a GPS. You can join Marcos Eberlin as he uncovers a myriad of artful solutions to major engineering problems in chemistry and biology. Find out how these solutions point beyond blind evolution and point instead to the designing ability of a mind, and a mind with foresight. Order on Amazon or visit DiscoveryInstitutePress.com to get your own copy of the book Foresight. Get Eberlin's new book from Amazon or at DiscoveryInstitutePress.com/foresight.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.